accession number 9342, reel 3.
Mr. Green, tape 3, were you given any special clothing before you went to Russia?
No, we weren't given any special clothing at all. As a matter of fact, we were very fortunate when we went to Russia because it was such a glorious summer there, which is now happening in Moscow today. Moscow today is higher than any of these other continental resorts. And as a matter of fact, when we were there, it was so hot that we had to have our trousers cut right from the knees. So we had shorts. And also that you could have your shirt sleeves cut off. But when the Australians, when they had it, they cut them off right away short. They cut their sleeves right out of their shirts. And they was real tough guys all the way through. Perhaps if I'll tell you this little story. We had an Australian cook, and he got a tarpaulin, and he called it his bivvy. And he used to cook by the wood that we got produced for him. A lot of the food was stolen from the fields, but still. And he was stripped to the waist. And he used to say that the boys used to go in his bivvy and he would make tea and he would make a chapati or a pancake, whichever you like to call it. And he was so tough that he'd made himself a yoke with two straps down, fitting on the buckets. And I'll tell you the story. He said, "Greeny, fetch yourself a couple of buckets of water." I said, "Yeah, okay, Dobby." Then I went under jar to the well, put the water, turn the wheel down, fetch one up, put the one, come back. Two more, Greeny. "Okay, Dobby." So I went around and got two more. Then he said he wanted two more. So just as I got the last two, Dobby, the men, all our friends, was coming out of his bivvy. He chucked them out. And he said, "Put them in there and back it all out of it." So I said, "You don't mean that, Darby?" He said, "Yeah, of course I do." So I tell you what I'll do with you, Darby. I said, "Let's go outside and strip to the waist and let's have a fight and give the boys a treat." I said, "Want to be careful, Darby?" He said, "You're the only man here. Sit down," he said. "I'll make a cup of tea and sit you more to practice." They were tough. You know, but some men are tougher than the others. But,
going back now to your journey, yes. What ship did you go on from
Newcastle? Oh, it was a big cargo trip, big cargo ship, a blunderous ship, if you like, but huge troop ship, because we had a lot of men on the troop, take on the troop ship. We were very fortunate that there was no sway, we had a comfortable journey right away up to Murmansk, right to the time we had the icebreakers break us in. It was a comfortable journey. But the difference, if I come back, when we went to Malta and went from the Navy, we went on an American ship called the Yale. And this Yale was a real perfect ocean-going liner. But owing to the fact that it was built too high out of the water, a ship rose somehow like this, forward, backward, sideways, back again, forward, back, and the side, and the side. And owing to the structure of this American transport called the Yale. It was called the Yale. I think there's no sailing in the Navy, all except me and the captain weren't sick. I wasn't sick, that's true. But the men, the troops, soldiers, sailors going over there, it was, I've seen men, they're green, you know, people say, oh, he goes green with seasick. Yes, they go sick with green, with seasick. And, but they couldn't clean up afterwards. So, and this Yankee said to me, he said, some shipboard, and I said, yeah, some shipboard, but it rocks too much.
How about the one you went to Russia on? Yeah. What was that like?
That was I went to the amount of troops and stores and ammunition that it was on. That was stable. That was stable. All you heard was the engines going tuk 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 tuk. But nothing where it was tilted left or right. The men, there was no sickness on it, no sickness on it. The Australians, they was gamblers, they had Kronecker balls, they had cards playing all the time. And everyone was in its whole little glory. And now, I'll tell you one more little story, I won't tell you any more. My lads knew that I was a boxer. So there was a chap named Russell out of the guards. He was heavyweight, I was a lightweight. And when they said, Bob, the list is there, I can't see who you're going to fight. So I said, OK, I'll go and see the officer. So I saw the officer and I thought, oh, could you meet on meeting? So, oh, he looked up at the police and said, oh, yes, you'll meet in Pete, Royal Navy. I said, thanks very much. So as I come back to the mess, they said, who you meet, Bob? I said, a bloke named Pete, Royal Navy. A sailor went by, he said to me, here, son, he said, don't do that. He said, go and scratch your name out. I said, haven't you seen him practice? And he comes to the Liverpool Stadium. I said, here, come here. I said, do you know Tommy Noble, Bermondsey, the bantamweight champion of Great Britain? I'm his brother, Bobby Noble, but don't say a word to him. Let him fight on. So it was a beautiful, it was a lovely trip, but I beat this mate. Well, because I've been taught properly, hadn't I? Sid Smith from Bermondsey, flyweight champion of the world. He was a flyweight champion of the world because there was no, it was an initiation. You see, before what it is like today.
Well, let me ask you about this trip. Did you see the midnight sun for the first time?
Yes. It seemed the midnight sun, it because we was all the barrack room lawyer just told you. You see the sun go down, right there, right down out of this. And very, very soon, matter of what, 3, 5, 10 minutes, you saw it rise up again. And there it was. And they called it in the land of midnight sun, which is Norway, northern Norway, actually the land of the midnight sun. Not Russia, it's from Norway comes up, then Norway and Sweden comes up like that. And Murmansk is right round the corner of Norway.
And did you see the Aurora Borealis?
Yes, we saw the Aurora Borealis. And that, to me, if to define it, do you see the southern news? Do you see when the sun is there and all those big Bosnians coming over, and that's what it was like. It's a sparkling on the ice, where it sends out all these lovely sprays. And unfortunately, I suppose at being 19, I wanted to see the world, but I didn't know the beauty of all those things. To me, it was just a lot of lights coming up off the ice and bouncing up into the sky.
Ah, oh, but you remembered them, haven't you? It obviously made an impression.
Definitely made an impression. I think I wanted adventure, and this was adventure. I mean, you won't see it nowhere else.
You were saying about the ice. You had to go through the ice. Is that right?
Yes. That's
how did you get through ice?
Well, there was two icebreakers, which are like a flat-bottomed tug, more or less. and they rock themselves. They rock like that, and they break the ice as they're rocking, and the ship, the transport ship, follows up afterwards. They must keep on because they can crush, can't they? And that is the way they're done. But we couldn't go right the way round to Archangel because it was worse round there. And we had to stop at Murmansk. We had to stop at Murmansk until it got a little fraction warmer. But we still had icebreakers break us into Archangel.
Well, could you tell me now about arriving in Murmansk? What was it when you arrived in Murmansk?
Oh, yes.
Yes, what was your impression of the port?
Oh, Murmansk at that time was absolutely deserted. The only thing that we saw at Murmansk at that time was a marketplace. Troops have to, they lodge in old buildings, schools and everything like that. So it's not the fact that you can go there and get accommodation billeted like you do in England. It was rough, wasn't it? You were rough. That's it. You were a soldier.
Mm. Where did you billet? Whereabouts were you billeted? Where was your billet in Murmansk?
Oh, it was in a big school place. Council place, I suppose it was. But as long as you was undercover, that was everything. Some people went away from, like Murmansk, a little way in, and got accommodation in old farmhouses, places like that. But there's no such a thing as accommodation of beds or anything like that. You knew what you were doing. You slept rough. You was a soldier, and you was tired, and then you slept.
How about your food? Where was that prepared?
Food. You had the mess caterers for the food, and at the cookhouse, a soldier's life from 14 was what they call a hard tack. One tenner bully between two of you, and another favourite was a stew they called McConaughey's. But McConaughey's produced it in the East End of London. You had McConaughey's, you had cheese, and you had bread. And but as regard the cooking, sitting down to dinner, the soldiers of war, no, there's no such a thing. That is where the Navy scores. You've got your mess, and you've got the man to cater for you. You've got your drink after you've had your dinner. And you've got port and starboard watch. So if you're a port man and it's your port day, you do the cleaning up, you do the washing of the bowl, you washing of the port, and you sweep under the mess and tidy up. The next day it's starboard. It's a starboard town. That's their town to go. So that is the difference between, once again, the difference of the beauty of the Navy against the army.
In Murmansk,
yes.
Was there much evidence of British and other troops? You know, were there many troops about?
Oh, no. No, it was only our brigade.
How about the Russians as well?
Oh, no. I've got a paper in there. I'll give you it to you. You can read it. It's what Murmansk is today. What it is today against what it was days gone by. Murmansk is 10 weeks total darkness every year. This is a good article.
It's really what you saw, which we are interested in, you see.
Yes.
It's what you experienced in 1919.
Yes.
You know, you were saying that there weren't many people about.
No,
but
no.
I was wondering if you saw any evidence of other army people.
Murmansk was a big port when the British were supplying arms to help them to fight the Germans.
And did you see many of those arms?
Nothing at all. It was Murmansk, and it was derelict. Nothing there.
How long were you there?
I should say we was there about 3 weeks. Not much more than 3 weeks.
So what would you have done with yourself in those 3 weeks?
Well, there's a lot of gambling goes on in the army, a lot of card games in the army, and that's mainly how the men spend their time, playing cards.
Were you getting pay? Were you paid while you were there?
Yes, we were getting paid at various times, because your money you was paid, and then you didn't get any money for, like, I'd say, like 2 weeks' money or 3 weeks' money. And then you didn't get any more, but that was added to your account for when you come out of the service. There's your gratuity, you come out of the service. What they haven't paid you, see?
And while you were in Russia,
yes,
were you paid well? Did you get good money there, or was it normal sort of service pay?
No, we got paid in Archangel, when we was at Archangel, got paid by rubles. How they did that, I don't really know, because they were English notes. There must have been an agreement from somewhere or the other that the rubles would be recognised by who, I don't know. But we had the rubles given to us for our wages. And like, if you was in Archangel, there was only one tram in Archangel, only one school in Archangel. But they had houses there. So you had, they accepted your rubles. I mean, I got on one of these trams, or what the tram, and changing my ruble. I think the ruble was valued about half a crown at those times. The lady conductress gave me a bunch of old stamps, and I sort of looked at them and the other people sort of smiling. And look, she's giving him his change. This is my change. I kept it for a long, long time. And then I took it to a philanthropist. She said, no, they're too old, they're too dirty, and they haven't got date stamps on them. So that was how it was. But no, we didn't need any money. We didn't need them. You couldn't buy them. There was nothing to buy at all. No.
Could I ask you now then about going to Archangel? You know, after the 3 weeks in Murmansk.
Yes.
You went by the same ship, did you? Did you get on the same ship?
I couldn't tell you that.
But did the whole battalion go with you? Did the whole battalion go?
Oh, yes, all went. Yes, the whole brigade. The whole brigade went.
You had to have icebreakers again, I expect.
We had to have icebreakers to take us into Archangel, because it comes right round the northern, and it comes in the White Sea. The other's out in the Atlantic, isn't it? And we had the breakers to take us in again.
What was your impression of Archangel? How did it compare with Murmansk?
To me, it impressed me that this was a town. This had got a tram. No trams in my mind. And it's also that they got this. The people was there, and they had a park there, where us boys used to go around this park of a night time, because or even if daytime, if it was off duty on the daytime. So it was a different atmosphere entirely. And if you read that paper that I've shown you, it tells you everything about it.
How about your billets? You know, where did you stay in Archangel?
Where
were you billeted?
I'll tell you where we were billeted, in an old schoolhouse. It was an old schoolhouse. And I don't know why, when you're a man like that, you don't think as you want a bed and mattress or sheets. Or things like that. You know very well you've done your day's work, and you've got finished, and you're going to get down to Kip, and you just get down on the ground, get your blanket, and sling it over you, and put your valise for your pillow, and you don't know any more about it.
Could you keep clean? You know, did they have washrooms and bathrooms?
Oh, yes, no, not in bathrooms, no, no, you, no. The when we was there practically, our cleanliness come from the River Tweena, where we go swimming and but no, there's no no towel of soap and things like that.
Not even in Archangel when you were in the school.
Yes, I think there was soap there. I think we had yes, the ablutions was more like it there, because they used to. Royal Engineers was a mainstay of any army. And what they used to do, they could get a big boards like that, and they would drill a hole out, and then have the bowls to go in there, and say the water, you're going to got your water like that, and that was how you kept yourself clean in a place that's got water. But I don't think Mermaids had much drainage of water at all, and it was a terrible place. That was my true impression of it. They had a bit of a marketplace, but nothing. Our country was more refined. You saw the people, you saw the women, you saw the boys, you saw the kids. Not many men, but I don't know whether I suppose there were half of them had been still roaming around Russia in their army uniforms. But it, but much more, more impressed with Archangel. Because I don't know much about the royalty of Russia, but whether there was any royalty in Archangel, I couldn't tell you. But it was a town. It was something that the others hadn't got. When you got the park, and you got there was a bandstand there, but no band playing. Not one was there, and. Well, it was someone kept it all clean, and we don't know that. They accepted us, because I don't suppose they knew what we was going to do. More than we knew what we ourselves was going to do.
Did you see any of the Russian soldiers while you were there in Archangel?
Yeah, no, not in Archangel. No, they hadn't reached Archangel. No.
Not even the white generals. Did you see any of the white forces? You know, the...
The white Russian, loyal Russians, no, didn't say
anything. No. And how about the Russian population? Yeah. How did they treat you?
They accepted it.
Were they friendly to you, though?
Well, friendly to them. They weren't enemies. They didn't spit at us, and we never spit at them. I mean, the British soldier, he's respected. I mean, British soldier is respected. He's more respected than the German soldier or any of these others, because the British soldier he can live on his own, but these other Germans, they can't. They've got to have a man to tell them what to do. You see, what a British soldier won't. He uses his own initiative, and therefore you don't want no trouble. The British man is different. He doesn't want any trouble. He doesn't do any ransacking or things like that. We used to go and steal their potatoes. Well, that was for survival. That's a different story. But then they were compensated afterwards. What land that they said they'd lost or what we pinched us, and they were supposed to have been compensated afterwards.
In Archangel? Did you pinch the potatoes in Archangel? Or was that when you went out into the country?
Oh, that was when we went out into the country.
Keeping to Archangel,
yes.
Did the population there, did they ever entertain you or ask you to their homes or anything?
No, I don't think so. No.
How about relationships with the women? Did any of the men go with the Russian women?
No, I never saw any of that. No. The only thing they used to say when we was out in Russia, we gradually learnt the language for various things, you know. And then we say to them, that's the girls, English soldat, dobra, nit, they say, English soldat, nit, dobra, Rusky soldier, dobra. That was about the only fraternisation that we had with them.
What did that mean?
It's good, see. English soldat, nit, dobra, no good. See? But Ruski soldier. Dobra, very dobra. Dobra. Neat. In fact, I'm glad you learnt a lot. We were fortunate that we had in our section, we had an interpreter. The interpreter, if you like to put it. And of course, he was a great friend of ours. He'd teach us. And I know where once we went to a village where they had a dairy farm. And we went to this dairy farm, and they saw a little Scots bloke. I don't know his name. He had a camera. They wanted his photos taken. So they wanted their photos taken. So they pulled them outside on stools, brought them out this farm place, dairy, big dairy produce place. And then they said, they spoke, tell him. I said, what's he saying? So he said, they want you to go and sit in the middle of them. So I said, well, me, I said, oh, jokes, I'm not going to film. He said, damn it, go and sit with them. I went and sat in the middle of it, and they thought it was marvellous. I think, didn't come.
Well, is there anything else you can tell us about Archangel, or should we now go down the Divina?
That was about when we went down the Divina. We didn't stop there long. I don't suppose we stopped there about 2 or 3 weeks until the lighters came.
Yeah.
And that was different. See, when the lighters came, these lighters was what they used in the Dardanelles, which was a failure.
That's right, yes. But keeping to Russia, we won't go into the Dardanelles.
Yes.
But you used the same lighters,
It was the same lighters that was built and made for the storming of the Dardanelles. And that's what... These sad sailors to steer them, see? But they tell you these things, but you must accept it for what they tell you. You see what this, our skipper on this Abad, that's what he told us. He said these were flat bottom boats used for the landing of the Dardanelles. And that's what they had there for these. But they used to get stuck in the mud banks if the tide was against them. The tide was against them, push them on the sand. We had to get it off.
So when you actually went on the lighters, on the Dvina, the river...
Yes.
Did you have any idea where you were going? Or
no.
What you were going to do? Did you have a briefing?
No, I did. There was no briefing. We went 300 to 400 miles up the Dvina. Some said it was 6, but I don't think it was 6. 300 to 400 miles up the Dvina until we come to our destination. And that was going to be our base for the division.
How long did it take you then to travel up?
I think it was about 30 mile a day. I think it was about 10 to 15 days to get there. But of course that included getting stuck on the sandbank, on the mud banks, where we have to pull it off. Rock it off. Put a tide, rock it off. And then away she went. But it was so hush-hush, really, that it spotted, really. If we'd have only known exactly what we were going to do when we got there, if we'd have said that these men had killed our blokes, then we'd have had something to fight for, something to get your teeth in. But there was nothing. When we first fired them there, machine guns, it was like firing into no man's land. You couldn't see we've traversing over like that traversing because you couldn't see through the woods. The woods was the trees, that's all you saw all day long.